This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
At this cemetery in Sao Paulo, burials are happening on an industrial scale. Mourners are allowed 5 minutes at the gravesite before the next funeral rolls in. From the air, a sobering sight of what may be to come. 13,000 fresh graves have been prepared and they're still digging. Across Brazil, cases of infection are rising fast. Hospitals are undermanned and overstretched. Many suspected COVID-19 deaths are not added to the official tally.
Before he almost died from COVID-19, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson suggested Britain might just let the virus run until herd immunity was reached. What would that look like? We're about to find out as Brazil rockets towards utter disaster. Like most countries, the Brazilian economy has crashed faster and further than the Great Depression of the 1930s. Like the United States, their president is encouraging rebellion against his own government's virus protection program. Brazil's Jair Bolsonaro famously said of the coming wave of coronavirus deaths, "So what?" With his partisan base in a country of extreme wealth disparity, Brazil is a mirror of the United States. Brazil had the ninth largest economy in the world and at least 211 million people. All sorts of raw materials and agricultural products come from Brazil, including the soy underlying meat and poultry production in the United States, Europe, and beyond. What happens in Brazil doesn't stay there. Anyone with a shred of consciousness for the human project should fear what is happening in Brazil. In these very early days of the Brazilian virus onslaught, we have a report direct from Sao Paulo. Gustavo Ribeiro, editor of the Brazilian Report, gives his views. Then we talk with Tenny Naumer, an American experienced in health and finance who lived in Brazil for 14 years. Tenny is also a news hound whose tips inspired several Radio EcoShock shows. I'm Alex Smith. Let's go to our first interview.
Radio EcoShock.
For a report on the pandemic in Brazil, we go to Gustavo Ribeiro, founder and editor-in-chief of the Brazilian Report, from Sao Paulo. Gustavo, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
Are most shops and restaurants closed in Rio and Sao Paulo?
Yes, both states are under quarantine rules since late in March, and bars and restaurants can only work on a delivery basis. All non-essential shops are closed, and only healthcare facilities and civil construction and drugstores, this kind of services that the government has deemed as essential, can operate normally right now.
Are people in the streets trying to keep social distancing, and are many wearing masks?
Masks are becoming mandatory in several parts of the country right now. The government of São Paulo and Rio have enacted laws that first they tried to make it mandatory in public transport, and now you cannot go on the streets without wearing one, or else you may be fined. And depending on your behavior, you could even be arrested for what they call a reckless behavior, again, to the detriment of public health. But in terms of social distancing, No, not so much. When you go to supermarkets, you see people passing right next to each other, just in complete disregard with the recommendations of the WHO or even the health ministry.
When was the first COVID-19 case discovered in Brazil, and is the disease spreading rapidly?
COVID-19 arrived in Brazil late in February 26th. Although many experts suggest that the virus arrived to Brazil much sooner than that, we just don't know yet. There have been some conflicting reports about who would actually be patient one. What we do know is that the virus was brought to Brazil by wealthy people who were traveling to Europe. So When scientists mapped the genome of the coronavirus in Brazil, they found much more similarities with strains they found in Italy than those in China, which suggests that most of the first people that were diagnosed in Brazil actually had been to Milan or Rome just days prior to being diagnosed. And the virus is spreading really quickly in Brazil. We have several metropolitan areas with hospitals reaching their ICU capacity. Although it is complicated to talk about figures in Brazil because underreporting is massive. We have many studies claiming that the real figures could be from 5 to 15 times higher than the actual figures, and that the real number of people infected by the coronavirus in Brazil could be 1.6 to 2 million people right now.
Gustavo, please tell us about the outbreak in Manaus, the state capital of Amazonas.
Yes, Manaus is the biggest Amazonian city, and in the north part of the country, sanitation conditions are less than ideal, and it was a region where social distancing was not respected. It quickly became the state with the highest numbers of deaths and infections per million. It was the first city to declare a collapse of its healthcare system, and even funerary companies were at full capacity because the number of burials that were registered in Manaus were figures that were never seen before. Authorities had to start digging common graves, collective graves, to deal with the sheer amount of bodies that were coming.
Is the Brazilian government protecting the health of indigenous people?
No. It is important to understand that even in normal circumstances, the health conditions in indigenous communities are pretty precarious because they live in a lot of areas that are isolated. So if you get sick, you have to get on the boat and have a boat ride for hours, sometimes more than a day, in order to get to a city with proper health care. For instance, there are very few cities that have ICU beds in the Amazon region. So that's already a problem under normal circumstances. Now we have almost a little over 80,000 indigenous peoples that are considered to be extremely vulnerable. And the fact that many of these communities have not developed the antibodies that urban populations have make them all the more vulnerable to the coronavirus. And it's also important to realize that Jair Bolsonaro, even before becoming president, he has always gone against any policies to protect indigenous people. He said that indigenous people must be forcefully integrated to Western society, and that the government should not give them an inch of land more than they already have.
And then we have Brazil's almost lawless shanty towns, the favelas, and they get little government aid in the best of times. What is the risk of COVID-19 if it reaches the millions of people living there?
Well, Brazilian favelas could be breeding grounds for the coronavirus because these are areas that are very poorly urbanized. Sanitation conditions are not very good, and they are extremely densely populated. In São Paulo, wealthy neighborhoods sometimes have rates of 2% of households with more than two people per room. When you go to favelas, that rate goes to 44, 50, 60%. So social distancing is nearly impossible in some communities. And you have families living together with elderly people or children, all with sometimes four, five, six people in a one-room house. So it could really spread quickly in those communities. And the problem is these communities have very little access to healthcare services. So maybe the spread is already going very fast. We're just not fully aware of the extent of the problem.
And it's not like people there are separated from the people of Rio or Sao Paulo, because I've been to the favelas. It was a very long time ago. But it seemed to me that so many people there worked down in the city, went to people's homes as servants and as landscapers and whatever, providing basic services, so that if there's illness in the shanty towns, there will be illness again back in the big cities. It can't be separated.
Yes, no, you're totally right. In Rio, the urban dynamic, it means that wealthy communities are very close to poor ones. And we are seeing now, because the fact that, for instance, we have a very informal economy, and people in the favelas, usually they don't live paycheck to paycheck, they live day to day. So they have to go out and get the earnings on that day, and they will have to do that every single day. So social distancing in those communities are also very reduced, because people just cannot afford to stay home. And the government has not provided enough financial support to these communities in order to allow them to stay home. And we have seen, for instance, in Rio, Copacabana, which is a neighborhood with a high rate of elderly people, it was the number one place in terms of COVID-19 deaths. And that has quickly changed to Campo Grande, a peripheral community in Rio, where social isolation rates are the lowest in the city. It is where a place where people just have to go out and have to make ends meet every single day.
The president of Brazil has sometimes been called the Donald Trump of South America, and he has said publicly there is little he can do. And like Trump, Jair Bolsonaro contradicted his own health authorities and encouraged people to get back to life as normal. He walks about without a mask, still shakes hands, apparently. Talk to us about the mixed messages coming from the federal government.
Since the start of the pandemic, the Brazilian Health Ministry has followed WHO recommendations. And since the start of the pandemic, Jair Bolsonaro has been the poster boy for COVID-19 denialism. So he has undermined the authority of his health minister time and again. Late in April, he fired his health minister. So we have, for 3 weeks, a health minister that just seems lost, that has not yet shown what he's there for, has not yet presented people with a plan to tackle this pandemic. The only noteworthy thing he has done so far is to admit that Brazil is flying blind amid this pandemic. And like you said, Bolsonaro has created gatherings on the street. He has incited supporters to go out and protest against stay-home rules. And he has been a major force of maybe helping this pandemic be much worse. For instance, on the Brazilian Report, we published a study that shows that the president's speeches, his public addresses, are very much linked to drops in social isolation rates. So the political pressure that President Bolsonaro has put in order to discredit experts, discredit state governors that try to enforce quarantines, has worked on the president's behalf and has essentially dropped public support for social isolation.
And what is the situation for COVID-19 testing in Brazil?
Brazil has tested very little. And for instance, the United States are by no means a world standard for COVID-19 tests, but the U.S. had tested 10 times more per million people than Brazil. So, like I said, even the health minister will be the first one to admit that Brazil just doesn't know how many people are infected, how many people have actually died of COVID-19, because in Brazil we have a surge of deaths by undetermined causes. We have a big spike in cases of acute respiratory distress syndrome. The signs are all over the place that the COVID-19 problem is much worse in Brazil. We just don't know because we don't test enough.
On a side note, I watched the top Rio team play Sao Paulo at Maracana Stadium, and obviously football in Brazil, which North Americans call soccer, it's close to religion. It was crazy times, giant flags, giant crowds. What will happen to the football season?
The football season is upended. The Brazilian football season starts with state championships, and these have been interrupted. There are calls that we should go back. It is a premature move, but many teams are already midway through May resuming practices, but we still don't know when a football match will be played again in Brazil. We don't know how the Brazilian League, which is a 38-fixture tournament, is going to play out, if it's going to have the same format, if, for instance, Brazil will adapt its sports calendar, because in Brazil we use a year calendar. So the 2020 season, for instance, it starts in January and it ends in December. Maybe we will adapt to the Northern Hemisphere and start on what would be the Northern Hemisphere fall and then finish by the beginning of summer. But it's still very much upended. Nobody knows what is going on, and nobody knows, actually, if people will want to go to a stadium in the near future. And that's the key thing, because revenue will go down. And in Brazil, we have most clubs are in dire financial strains, but the big ones, they can manage. They have a lot of political support, and they can manage to renegotiate debts and renegotiate TV deals and try to make it work. The problem here is that we have hundreds of small teams that depend on these state championships I talked about that are very small tournaments, and maybe a lot of them would just go bankrupt, and we're going to have a completely different football landscape in 2021 and so on.
In early 2020, Brazil had the ninth largest gross domestic product in the world, and now industrial production has crashed, as it has in most other countries, but money has fled the Brazilian stock market and billions of dollars just left the country. What signs do you see of the economic hit from this pandemic?
It's going to be a long depression. And the problem is we are just off the worst recession in the century, which happened between 2015 and 2017. So now it would seem that we were starting to pick up economic activity again, and then, boom, the pandemic hits us. So it's going to be a long depression because, for instance, Brazilian industry now is at a point where it is 20% below 2014 levels. Brazilian is undergoing a massive deindustrialization process. We are already starting to see massive layoffs, and some estimates have that Brazil's unemployment rate could go up to 30-40% of the workforce. So that would mean that we would go from the current 12-13 million people out of a job to about 40-45 million people out of a job. And in a country where purchasing power has deteriorated a lot over the past 6-7 years, that could mean social unrest, that could be very dangerous. And one thing is for sure, inequality will go up and poverty rates will go off the charts in at least the near future.
And what about the tourism industry and Rio's famous restaurants?
The tourism industry is practically in a halt right now. Almost all flights in Brazil are grounded, and people just don't have faith that the economy will be anywhere in an acceptable level. So family consumption is going down. People are just reducing their spending to the bare minimum, to their core needs, and tourism is by no means one of those needs. So it will be a hard future for the tourism industry. For instance, aviation companies, they are depending on a government bailout to avoid bankruptcy. We're going to see a hotel occupancy rates plummeting. And the problem is the tourism industry in Brazil depends on a very fragile ecosystem of local players and small players. And these people are going to have to face economic hardship at least for 1 to 2 years, because tourism in Brazil is mostly domestic. We don't get that many tourists from abroad. So tourism in Brazil, for instance, brings around 7 to 8 million people per year, and that's about as much or even fewer people than the Eiffel Tower alone. So it's already a feeble industry that depends almost solely on domestic travel, and with unemployment rates going up, with revenue going down, I just don't see people traveling as much or spending as much on trips as they would before.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
From an outside perspective, Gustavo Ribeiro, it appears parts of Brazil are difficult to govern in the best of times. Maybe Bolsonaro is right. There's really very little the government can do to reduce the death toll. And will the population cooperate? What are your thoughts?
I think there is a lot that the government can do and that the government is not doing. For instance, trying to offer people mechanisms for them to stay at home. We have seen a lack of political coordination with Congress in order to pass economic bills that would help the country weather the crisis. Or even if the president was not just asking people to go out and to expose themselves to COVID-19, maybe that would already be a major help. So the problem is not necessarily what the government is not doing. The problem is also how the government actively is making the situation worse. And yes, there are many places in Brazil that are difficult to govern. Brazil is a very heterogeneous country, and you cannot just implement one single measure or one single strategy everywhere. And I'm sure you in the U.S. can relate to that, because you have New York is not the same as Wyoming and so on. So in Brazil, we have also states that are extremely different from one another. That being said, most governors are trying to work together, are trying to exchange knowledge. And we just don't see the federal government stepping in and coordinating this effort, because the federal government has the lion's share of tax revenue. It could try at least to make cooperation between states in terms of sharing healthcare debts, in terms of sharing revenue with one another. And that the government is not even trying to be a leader in this crisis. So I would say that Bolsonaro's approach to COVID-19, to put it mildly, has been a disaster.
And now in the international press, aerial photos are circulating of mass graves being prepared outside several Brazilian cities. Are there any estimates, official or unofficial, of the expected death toll in Brazil over the next few months?
Well, we could be heading for tens or even hundreds of thousands of deaths. But like I said, testing is so feeble in Brazil right now that we just cannot estimate what is going on. If we take, for instance, Brazil has yet to reach 10,000 deaths, confirmed deaths. And we know that the numbers are much higher than that. If, for instance, some estimates that the real numbers are 15 times higher than the official figures, we could already have had 150 to 200,000 deaths without even knowing that those were caused by the coronavirus. So things are going to get much uglier, because even the government admits that the peak of the outbreak in Brazil will come between May and June. So we have to brace ourselves for the worst 60-day stretch, and this is precisely at the moment when people are less inclined to stay home and they're more eager to get back to some kind of normalcy.
And as this pandemic develops, the Brazilian government has been racked with turmoil and firings and resignations, as you mentioned. Could this emergency destabilize the government? And is there a possibility the military could step in to rescue the situation?
Well, the military has been an integral part of the Bolsonaro administration. There are roughly 3,000 military officers in the executive branch right now named by this administration. They have a lot of cabinet members. It's the first democratically elected president to have as many military officers in the cabinet. In Brazil, we know we have a history of military coups. There were a lot of successful ones and a lot of attempted ones over the 20th century. So that has always been a shadow lurking around in Brazil. But as far as our sources are telling us, our sources within the military's top breath, they would not engage in this kind of reckless adventure of trying to topple a democratic government. But the mere fact that they are on the president's corner has prevented other political forces from charging towards the president. They are right now over 30 impeachment requests sitting at the desk of the Brazilian House Speaker, and he has said that there is no interest in pulling such a move right now, and we don't have yet the political ingredients for maybe going after Bolsonaro right now, because even if he is the least popular Brazilian leader after 16 months in office, he still has a very solid core of supporters of 28% to 30%. And social isolation, which he is so against, is actually working on his favor, because we don't have people on the streets protesting against the government. Pretty much everyone who is against the government is staying home. So that's working on Bolsonaro's favor.
Gustavo, what is it like personally to be riding out a pandemic in Sao Paulo?
It's pretty nerve-wracking at times. We are seeing the president's supporters going after the press. Just on May 3rd, we saw two reporters being beaten down by the president's backers during an anti-quarantine demonstration. We have seen an enormous amount of misinformation circulating and people just not knowing who to trust. I hope that this pandemic will help the press regain public trust, because information in this case is going to save lives, and the lack of good information may cost a lot of lives. So I just hope that the Brazilian public will start appreciating the job that reporters are doing, putting themselves out there and putting themselves sometimes at risk in order to give them updated and clear information about the pandemic. Even if we're still learning things about COVID-19.
As we wrap up here, tell us about the Brazilian report and where our listeners can find it.
Well, the Brazilian Report is an independent media outlet that tries to explain Brazil to foreign audiences. So we write about politics, economics, and society. You can find the Brazilian Report on brazilian.report. We also have a weekly podcast that is on every single podcast aggregator, and you can listen to us speaking about the ins and outs of Brazilian politics. And well, like we like to say, you never get bored in Brazil. There's always a new crisis to cover.
From Sao Paulo, we have been speaking with Gustavo Ribeiro, founder and editor-in-chief of the Brazilian Report. And I want to thank you for such a clear report from your country. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. And whenever you need information from Brazil, we're always here.
We will be back to you. I'm Alex Smith reporting for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. with your host, Alex Smith.
Now, in hindsight, we can see the toxic mix of failing to provide public health care, a broken safety net, billionaires sucking wealth away from the growing underclass, and a corrupt political system. Am I talking about Brazil or the United States? Be honest. If anyone told you the United States would have millions of cases of a new virus and more deaths than any other country, would you have believed that? But we do not know the prognosis for countries with hundreds of millions of people in absolute poverty, the places with almost no infrastructure, weak government, low education, slight health care, and perhaps a reliance on religion or magic. How will the COVID-19 pandemic develop in Africa, India, or Indonesia? Brazil may give us a preview. Why is Brazil ramping up as the next great COVID-19 disaster? You would have to know the country as Tani Naumer does. She lived in Brazil 14 years before returning to the United States. Tani is a professional translator in Portuguese, but I've been following her climate blog for years, and some of the stories you've heard on Radio EcoShock were inspired by her work. She has one of those rare eyes for important signals in a whole world of information. From Illinois, Tani Naumer, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, thank you for asking me to be on.
It must be difficult to see a country that you love approaching such a deadly disaster.
Oh, yeah, it really is. I have so many friends there, and they're not prepared. Their health care system must already be completely overwhelmed. I mean, I lived in a city in the interior that's out in the country of the state of Bahia, and that was a municipality with a good 400,000 people. I was the only American. But and I'm well acquainted with their healthcare system there. And the national healthcare system is called SUS. And basically, those are small clinics that give inoculations and pregnancy tests. But they also do a lot with birth control and giving out free birth control and also antiviral medication for HIV positive people. So that's one of the reasons that Brazil has a low rate of HIV death or infections, AIDS deaths or infections. They're very good about promoting condoms. But be that as it may, it's in no way capable of handling this crisis. The regular hospitals, the private ones, you largely have to pay up front to get into them. So that precludes everybody. And the doctors are not well trained either. They don't actually go to pre-med. They go straight from high school into medical school. There are some good ones, but generally they go outside the country to get more training, either to the United States or to the UK in general. So the situation there, they've hit over 600 deaths per day. People are buried within 24 hours. They're supposed to be buried. It's just going to be a mess because they have the same situation that we have here with a president who is uneducated in science and doesn't believe a lot of things that he should be believing. And he's an authoritarian and he's got a following of people that are much like we have the Trump following here in the United States. And it's just a mess. So I don't know what's going to happen there. It's not going to be good.
Yes, after saying the coronavirus was just a little flu, that was in March, Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro told a press conference that, quote, Brazilians don't catch anything. They already have the antibodies to keep it from spreading, end quote. And that sounds like the kind of magical thinking we have heard in America from Trump. Is the president in Brazil as powerful and influential as the American president?
In some ways, he may be more so. In other ways, not. The governors there in Brazil are doing what they can to protect their own people. But the corruption in Brazil is extreme. I couldn't even get a driver's license without the lady behind the desk looking at me, trying to figure out how she could give me a signal to give her something. It's so extreme there let's just go back to the coronavirus. They're not going to have supplies. They're not going to have testing. They're not going to have care. It's going to be bad. And Jair Bolsonaro, he is just kind of nutty, and he has a fanatical following, and the military kind of props him up. I've even heard that the military is actually in charge of day-to-day things, but I don't know. And also, he's being investigated. His family is being investigated for the murder of his family's connections are being investigated for the murder of the Rio City Council woman, Marielle Franco. And apparently the paramilitary police, ex-police officers, and ex-army have really risen in the years since I lived there, and they now control large neighborhoods like a mafia. And so the crime, the legal structure is failing. The judges, when you can just have somebody murdered for a couple of $100, a judge is not going to render an adverse decision, and a prosecutor has to go around with bodyguards. The judges, if they go after these gangs, they have to go around with bodyguards, which are usually killed. And it's just it's worse than Italy. It's far worse than Italy. So the level in the city is, it's just really bad. The coronavirus thing is going to devastate Brazil. I don't see any other outcome. They were going to kick out the Cuban doctors who had come in to help. They actually have pretty good training. I think maybe they didn't finally, but also the social distancing, people aren't practicing it. Most the poor there have, they're lucky if they have a third grade education. So they don't have science. They don't know about germs. They don't know about particles traveling in air. They have no idea of microscopy and how things can be very tiny and get them. And that all plays a part in it. Now that everybody's staying home and they have these large families, it's going to spread. It's just a very, I don't have any good news about Brazil.
Well, we may see a situation similar to what happened in Wuhan, China, where whole families pretty well passed away together in their houses. But, I dread those sorts of scenes. Now, according to a recent article in the British medical journal, The Lancet, quote, a recent study by Imperial College UK, which analyzed the active transmission rate of COVID-19 in 48 countries, showed that Brazil is the country with the highest rate of transmission. So that's another reason that I see to be terribly worried about news coming from Brazil, say in July or August, when it's winter in the southern hemisphere and even the common flu tends to spread during that time. But maybe I'm just being paranoid.
No, because those numbers in the report you mentioned are based on rather low testing. So you can imagine if there were more testing, what those numbers would actually say, the infection rate would be much higher. Again, that there is not going to be any care for the poor. I mean, this system as it is now, if they needed help with something, they might wait months to get an appointment. When I was there, for example, even I would have to stand on the street in line to get into the doctor's office and take a number because it was you couldn't call up and make an appointment. You had to go and physically stand there, even if you were sick, and get a number in line. It's really bad. It's going to be really bad, and it's going to be like the showcase for how bad things can be. And there's no way to get the testing in there. The rich people are going to try to get out and probably try to fly into Miami, where all the rich Brazilians with their corrupt money have bought apartments. Yeah, they will flee the country, or they will have some way of protecting themselves by isolating themselves. They might now have to do their own dishes for a change and prepare their own food. But yeah, the rich are going to make out, and the rest of the country is going to, you know, I have to wonder how this will affect the world's economy, too, because Brazil is not an insignificant supplier of raw materials around the world. things like that, and that will all be affected as well. Their credit rating has now been downrated. That's just the beginning. The currency is going down daily. I think it's gone down about 25% in the last 3 months. It's just not good, and I really am afraid for my friends there.
It's not a secret what's going on. In a speech at the Supreme Court, President Bolsonaro and his finance minister warned the economy would go into total collapse if the country was not reopened immediately. And the stock market has crashed. The financial system looks shaky. Money is fleeing the country. And I wonder if this is a reality that the country does need to reopen or people are going to starve. Or is this something being pushed by the elite in order to keep their own money safe? I don't know.
I don't think reopening the country or not reopening it is at this point, with no testing and no healthcare system functioning adequately, one wonders whether it will even matter because of the lack of social distancing. And I think it's just going to tear right through Brazil, and we're going to see what happens. I mean, when you look at the meatpacking plants in the States where they want to, they're forcing them to reopen when they've got hundreds of known cases, and everybody knows they're going to get exposed to it. Brazilians, on the other hand, they can't stay. The rich people are not going to ask the maids to come back and the domestic ladies at work, and they're not going to ask them to come back in the house unless they're stupid. Because, again, the education there, there's no great emphasis on science or bacteria and that kind of thing. But it's just like in this country, you're going to send your kids to school even if they reopen? Are you going to do that as a parent? No, absolutely not. So I don't think the economy is going to be helped by reopening it or hindered. I think it's just going to have to, the whole thing's going to have to run its course. It's like too late. It's way too late.
And is there a safety net for the majority of people in Brazil? Is hunger or even famine a possibility there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure it is. Because when Lula became president, they had Bolsa Família, which was a monthly stipend, and a lot of people came up, and it was very, very helpful. But they've had a program of austerity, which helps no one, and it certainly didn't help the economy. And people are already living on the edge. Yes, hunger. Yes, they had at the grocery stores, people would leave food, they would donate, and that would be handed out, and that all disappeared. That whole infrastructure disappeared when Lula came in and started Bolsa Família. And so I don't know if that was reintroduced by people willing to help. But in general, the rich don't give to charities because of corruption, and a lot of the money disappears. So in general, they don't have all these charities helping people. They do have some, of course, but in general, not like here, because the money just disappears. So no one trusts to give to a charity. They'll give a package of food, but still, you know, it's like in a time like this, they're going to be each to his own, like hunkering down and trying to limit, donations to family members and things like that. And I don't know what they're going to do in the cities where it's somehow easier out in the country, I think. But a place like São Paulo of 20 million people, I just don't have anything. There's just no bright spot here.
I know the wealthy hope this pandemic will hit the poor and maybe even reduce them in their sort of fascist daydreams, but top military generals, senators, and confidants of the president have come down with the sickness too. Do you think the suffering will be general, or as you say, the rich will just get out and the poor will die off in greater numbers? Any ideas on that line?
I don't know about the poor or the rich wanting the poor to die off because they find them very useful. But I think in the way it's spreading now in Brazil with no test, no really limited testing, I think it's just going to spread through the whole country. I don't see how people can avoid it, rich or poor. I don't see how anyone can avoid being exposed to this. They might get an exposure, infection rate of 80 to 90%. I just don't see how people can avoid it at this point. It's really going to just flood through the country.
Well, this is a nightmare. I live in a Canadian village right on the border with the United States, and our government has closed that border to all but essential traffic.
Good.
Well, America is the most infected country in the world. We're nervous, so I bet Brazil's neighbors must be worried to see that colossus falling to an unstoppable disease.
None of those neighbors have medical systems like we think of them here in the north. None of those countries have that. So they're all going to be quite worried. I haven't really looked at what the other countries are doing, but of course in Venezuela there is no medical system that functions anymore. I have a friend there that can't even get cheap blood pressure medication. Anyway, those countries are going to be hit hard too, but they might be able to, you know, do some isolation and social distancing. I don't know. But in Brazil, it's just impossible now. Yeah, one of my daughter's best friends there, we collected money to send to him. We transferred money to him so he could pay his rent because he wasn't working. And now he's come down with the virus, too, and he was social distancing.
That's pretty tough. So if the bodies begin to pile up and collapse sadly arrives, will the military step in again to rescue Brazil?
Oh, Lord. They might do something. I mean, Brazilians are used to things like this. It's not unknown to them. Like, we wouldn't expect our military to do something like that. But there, and, you know, they're having these protests, and the protesters are yelling, you know, bring back the military, because they've obviously forgotten what 20 years of a military dictatorship was like, because it happened so long ago. I think it ended in, 1986 or something, in the 80s anyway. And so they've long forgotten how bad that was and what an economic mess. There's not one single country that's ever had a military dictatorship that wasn't an economic disaster. So I don't know why they would think that would be any different. But they've just, it's like in this country, people have forgotten how things used to be, and they call for things that are ridiculous. So if the military steps in, I think it may create some order. But note that the military is not very far distant from the ex-police militias that are all over the country. I mean, it would be equivalent to letting those people have totally free reign. It would be, I don't even want to think about it.
Well, now you're back in the United States, but you're not really that much safer from this outbreak. What is happening in Illinois and with people you know there?
We're quite lucky in Illinois because we actually have a Democrat governor, Governor J.B. Pritzker, who, although Chicago's had a terrible outbreak, he's doing everything in his power to get equipment, PPE, and everything that he can do is being done. So I'm extremely grateful to live in the state of Illinois, because I was in Texas, which is opening up. I spent 3 years in Texas, and down there, they did not expand Medicaid under the ACA Obamacare plan. So their medical care for the poor covers only children and pregnant women. The rest better go and die quickly if you get sick. And here in Illinois, at least, Medicaid was expanded. We can't bear much more down here. I'm in the south part of the state, the extreme southern part, and we don't really have a lot of doctors here, so we have to keep this down, because any further increase now will overwhelm the system. And I've been very lucky, because I've been in the hospital three times in the last 2 months with a kidney stone problem, and fortunately they let me in because they had stopped all non-essential services. So we're doing good down here. So far, so good. I'm in a great state, but next door in Missouri, we got a crazy Republican who's just letting everybody do everything. I wish they had closed the Mississippi River bridges to Missouri and Iowa. Same thing, crazy people. But so far, so good in Illinois.
Hey, Teddy, on a personal note, I always wondered how you managed to spot the most essential climate news and the new science, and you published it at your blog at climatechangepsychology.blogspot.com. How do you stay so informed? Do you have any tips for us?
Well, I did work as a technical editor for Elsevier Science Publishers for 6.5 years on analytical chemistry academic journals in brain research. And I did start out in chemistry at university, and I kind of was born with a nose for more serious information rather than junk. And then I've been in some Google groups with some top climate scientists, to my great honor. And so I think the more you read, the more you can develop a nose for what's actually good, what's serious, and what's important. Because I had to, you know, there's almost 9,000 articles now on that blog. It's a pretty good database. I haven't had time in the last year or two to do what I once did with it. But after you go through that much information, you get a bit of an idea of, I had to go through two or three times that many articles just to pick them out. You do get a sort of a nose for it. All I can say is read, learn, read, learn.
Yes, so much new is happening in this world that we all need to be sort of permanently in school. I ask listeners to spend about an hour a day just trying to learn about climate and now about this disease, and to stay tuned to other countries, because we get so sucked into everything in America is about the United States, everything in Canada is about Canada, and the UK about UK. And yet we are in a global society, and this pandemic, I think, has taught us that if something pops up in Wuhan, China, or in Milan, Italy, you need to know.
Yeah, you do. And I lived in Europe for a total of 9 years, so I have a little bit of a broader viewpoint. And then being in South America for 14 years, so I have a little bit broader perspective than I otherwise would have. Every little bit of knowledge helps. I mean, I know people who've never been out of Southern Illinois, and they don't want to know about any of this stuff, and it upsets them to know about it. And you can't talk to these people. They get upset, and they don't want to be your friend anymore, basically. So I don't know. It's just I think books will be written on this subject. What is the psychology of people who can actually see the truth and understand it, and those who can look at the truth and say it's not the truth? I don't know how that works in the human mind.
I am seeing some blistering new research on heat levels coming to countries around the world, and some extremes beyond human endurance have already appeared in many places, including in the southern U.S. Do you think, and this is sort of a rhetorical question, but do you think climate impacts will take a holiday while we humans are stressed out about this pandemic and about the economic depression and about feeding ourselves and about failed politics and about what Trump said yesterday?
Oh, no. Summer's coming, and I live in southern Illinois, which used to have winter, and we don't really have snow anymore, and we have armadillos.
No, that's Texas stuff, armadillos.
And the trees are dying, and I saw and they've been dying for the last several years. We had a heat dome in 2012 where we had 105 to 113 degree Fahrenheit for a couple of weeks, and the trees literally just like exploded and fell over and died. And the trees over, it's like, I saw a good illustration of this. Our trees here, at least, are like similar to what happens to the coral reef. You know, the heat comes and it damages them, some of it dies. It comes and damages, some dies. And that's what's happening with the trees in southern Illinois. They're dying. They're falling over. It's like pickup sticks out here. And I mention it to people, and they don't see it. And they get upset and don't want to talk to me anymore. And we're going to have a bad summer. This summer, the jet stream is completely gone to lunch and not coming back for 100,000 years. And it's going to let all that heat in, just like they're having in California right now. Over in Africa, people don't talk much about Africa because that continent is not well examined. But they're having very high temperatures right now on the northern edge of their rainforest. India is having, you know, close to 50 degrees centigrade. It's bad, and it's not going to give us a pass this summer.
Returning now to our focus on Brazil, Tenny Naumer, what are your best hopes for that country for the time when this virus is finally beaten back?
Wow. I think our best hope is what we hope for all countries, and that is that people will have learned that they need to help each other, and we have to do this together and not apart, and we have to depend on each other and appreciate each other more, despite our various differences.
Good one. So as we wrap up here, is there anything else you'd like to talk about or to tell our listeners?
No, just keep up the good fight is all I can think of saying. We have to do it. Can't give up.
All right. Now, I'd like to get back to you at another time and talk to you more about the Amazonian rainforest and the destruction that's happening there and how important that is to the lungs, to the planet. We could spend hours on that. But for right now, let's say from Illinois, we've been speaking with longtime Brazilian resident Tenny Naumer. Find links to this story in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Tenny, it was great to finally meet you.
You too, Alex. I've listened to your program many times.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
Next week, I'm going to try to break through the spell of COVID to hear other harsh news we cannot avoid. I specialize in interviewing scientists about extreme heat. I have a small booklet of interview transcripts in the works, by the way. Scientific and medical guests explain how high heat threatens the human body. Every year, extreme heat kills millions of people directly and damages the natural world in ways we seldom see. In 2020, it is an awful race to see which will kill more people this year, the new coronavirus or weather extremes forced by climate change. It looks like both will happen at the same time, whether we want it or not.
Why is it taking so long? Can you explain it to me? Nobody can explain it to me. And don't tell me about all those damn winds again. Of the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere get all mixed up and overlap. I don't want to hear about that anymore. All I want to know is, if everybody was so smart, why didn't they know what would happen?
It did.
Well, I can't take it. Oh, yes, I can take it. But it's unfair. It's unfair because I didn't do anything. And nobody I know did anything.
There are many reasons to expect heat waves and wildfires this summer in the Northern Hemisphere. With far less air pollution to dim the sun, we may experience heat waves that kill off crops and people. That could add to the developing food crisis during the pandemic, which I have covered in recent shows, meaning some products disappear from store shelves in wealthy countries, and millions go into hunger, including the famine predictions I covered in last week's show. Next week, we will hear from two scientists with stark new conclusions about the coming heat. There are limits to what plants can stand before they die off. There are limits to the heat and humidity the human body can survive. We are already breaching those limits now and then, but in the coming decades, scientists say, heavily populated parts of Earth will become uninhabitable. Then comes great migrations not seen in history. Heat beyond normal experience is just as hard to imagine as the huge impacts of COVID-19. We are just at the start of both. I understand how painful this information can be. Sometimes I limp away after an interview or producing a show like this one. I head out into the garden or I talk to my chickens. Inside, I want to run away, maybe to a happier time in the past or some remote part of nature. But for you and I, there is a code. It is less painful to pursue the truth than to avoid it. We need to make big changes in our personal lives, as a society, and as a species. I believe there is a way toward a better future. It's not back. It's towards a better future. But only through the courageous search for reality and followed by right action by all of us. It sounds naive, but that is all we have. Thank you for listening to Radio EcoShock. Please tune in again next week and show someone you care this week.